I'll be back like before. You will see me on the draft room floor. Someone else will sing my praise, and we'll tank until a star comes our way. Now I'm gone, don't get mad, and go throw away this thing that we had. 'Cause when push comes to shove, you'll all wish you had a process to save all of your jobs.
Steady on my end, so that's always good.
Yeah, you know what else is good, man?
Dario Saric.
Well, also Dario Saric, but we haven't even done the introduction, because what's good is Almighty Ball on the Almighty Podcast, brought to you by Brian Toporek.
Yes, hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to see that Iverson jersey in the back. I feel like you're not a real NBA podcaster until you have a framed jersey in the background of your recording area.
That's so accurate. Yeah, I see a Rodman jersey behind you, so there we go.
Oh, and I got, see that, wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's Bird and Magic.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. You got one up on me. I have a Final Four poster from 2007, but that doesn't count, because the best players there were Greg Oden, who is in China, I think.
And wait, then who's Greg Oden?
Yeah.
Greg Oden.
And then Jeff Green, who he's got to finally break out this year. It's going to happen.
Charles Barkley's been saying it for the last few years. I really think it's going to happen this year, though.
Yeah, I am a Jeff Green apologist, and even I have started to come around. It's like, it's just, this is who he is. It's just who he is.
It's too bad. I mean, it's one of those things, though, like the dodo, right? Where the evolutionary mistake of the dodo and its inevitable extinction taught us a lot about basketball. And there's a lot to learn about Jeff Green's career. It's like, you know, no pundits, you can't just be an idiot who's a really good athlete. You'll be Jeff Green. You're not going to be LeBron.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, Brian is the host / co-host / hostess cupcake of the NBA podcast. along with Mort, who was on a podcast, I think it was episode 83 was the one we did, and they are an NBA podcast, which is why they're called the NBA podcast. And you can find Brian at and the NBA podcast at on Twitter.
You can find the NBA podcast at the NBA pod, and then you can find me at B Toporek.
Sweet. That's excellent. That's what I like to hear. All right. And today, we're gathered here to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. Last time we talked, it was a beautiful time. It was right after the draft. We were singing and dancing in the streets because it looked like Ben Simmons was coming to the, the City of Brotherly Love? Is that Philly?
Yep, that's Philly.
Nice. You would think it would be like the City of the Process.
Or just like anger and rage. Pure sports rage. I mean, give it like 3 years and there's the Rocky statue at the art museum, and then there's going to be a Sam Hinkie statue right next to it.
I mean, actually, what I think is going to happen is that in the year 2035, Hinkie is going to be the arc overlord of the nation of Finkadelphia. He's going to like be summary executing Colangelo and the rest of the bourgeoisie in the streets, and the numbers don't look good for you, Mr. Bryan.
Yeah, you won't find much of an argument. I think, we're all like pleasantly surprised by how Brian Colangelo didn't screw things up this summer, but there's still a very strong lean toward Hinkie, and I'm afraid that they are going to try to bury him. Whereas it's like, no, he gave you all of this, you just didn't have to screw it up. and you didn't so far. Good job.
Well, that, you know, and that's more than you can say about a lot of NBA front offices.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's those pleasant surprise part. And I'm going to write about this for Fanside in the coming weeks, but yeah, I mean, like, a lot of it is, you know, props to Colangelo for, like, having restraint and not handing out massive long-term deals. The only one that was more than 2 years was Jared Bayless, and that was 3 years, $27 million. Like, based on the contracts that were handed out this summer, that is a completely reasonable price for a guy who's probably going to be your starting point guard. Yeah. But we also just don't know how much other GMs saved him from himself.
Since, like, you're taking the point away and putting it into point forward, mm-hmm. Ben Simmons going to be... Would it be a power guard?
I think, yeah, sure. We could. It's just going to be like two shooting guards, but Bayless shot like 43% from three last year, so that's...
And like 31% the year before or something like that?
Yeah.
I really understand the fit, though. And yeah, I mean, I agree. The first thing I thought, right, was that Isaiah Cannon would be a natural re-sign, right?
Yeah. Yes and no. I get why they let him go.
Well, is it because he's really bad at defense?
Yeah. And he's pretty small, so, like, he can't really guard two guards, but he doesn't have any sort of point guard tendencies whatsoever, so you can't really play him. Like, Bayless isn't necessarily a full-time point guard, but he has, like, some passing skills. It's not going to be a complete disaster, whereas Kanan, it's like, you give him the ball, and he's going to keep the ball and shoot, like, some dickhead 27-foot three-pointer.
So we're of the same mind then that the number one rule of having a superstar or a superstar to be is that you don't put him next to Monte Ellis.
Right.
So that Monte Ellis is the main ball handler.
Yeah.
If you have LeBron, put the ball in LeBron's hands.
Right.
And if you have a guy like Ben Simmons, playing him offensively as a power forward is just a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
So we're of the same mindset that on a team that has Ben Simmons, the point guard role is defunct, essentially, I guess.
Yeah, you just don't need Chris Paul. Like, you need a guy who can pass, but he also needs to, like, it's more important, honestly, to have a guy who can knock down threes. And I think that's the big reason Ish Smith wasn't re-signed, was because he is that pure kind of floor general.
I mean, he's not that good.
Yeah, well, there's that. But, like, he resuscitated their offense both, like, each of the past 2 years. Like, he came in after the trade deadline in 2014-2015, and then, like, all of a sudden Nerlens was catching lobs left and right, and he had that dig where he's like, yeah, Ish is the best point guard I ever played with. And then Michael Carter Williams had just been traded. So he was like, ooh, okay, Nerlens, that was a dick move, but as it turns out, he was probably right. And then, you know, they were 1-30 last year, and Ish comes in and they go 6-9 in their next 15, and it's like, oh, the Sixers can, like, sort of be competitive again. But afterward, teams figure out Ish can't shoot, so they just kind of sagged off of him. And between that and his not-so-great defense, it was a pretty clear reason not to re-sign him. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right. Like, if you have a superstar on your roster, you can't have a fully formed roster and then just plug the superstar in. It's the other way around. Like, you need to get a superstar and then build the roster around him.
Huh. I think at least the particular type of superstar that Ben Simmons is, for sure. I guess the superstar with the ball in his hand, because, like, Shaq, you know, Shaq isn't the primary ball handler. But
that's true, yeah. And, like, KD is the same way. Like, the Warriors are not going to struggle putting KD.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think particularly it's the point forward style.
Mm-hmm.
You need a particular type of point guard to make that work, which is, I think, you know, Utah figured that out and went out and got Grant. I was about to say Grant Hill, but it's George Hill.
Yeah, George Hill. Right. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Because Gordon Hayward can, like, he's more of a ball handler and can actually create offense on his own. So you don't need, again, you don't need Chris Paul. You don't need, like, a pure, true point guard to, like, handle the ball all the time.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that makes things really maybe a little bit more simple to sort of... It's almost like Ben Simmons is a Windex bottle, right? And the 76ers are a big whiteboard.
Yeah.
And there's marks and all sorts of shit everywhere and like all these drawings and like stuff that didn't work out.
Right.
Finally, you can actually start to really reimagine putting together a team once you have Ben Simmons, because he's just like, okay, instead of thinking about this team, it's like, what if this worked out or what if that worked out? You can start to think of it in terms of, okay, how are we going to build off of Ben Simmons, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
that's why they call it a foundational piece.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't point at the microphone. Foundational piece.
Yeah, Coach Nick from B-Ball Breakdown actually had a really good video, I think, probably a week or two ago about this. Like, he boldly said that the Sixers are going to be the most fun team in the NBA to watch, which...
They're a top five NBA League Pass team to me.
Yeah. I get. I mean, like...
I don't think they'll be great, but, like,
Simmons. No. Yeah, but, like, don't you want to watch Minnesota more than the Sixers, right?
Yeah, top five.
Yeah, I'll take top five. That's fair. Because, like, between Simmons and Saric and Embiid, like, I agree. Like, I'm super excited to watch it. I think even casual fans have reason to watch them. But most fun team was a bit of a stretch. Either way, it was just, like, between Simmons, Saric, and then Sergio Rodriguez as well, who's showing out in Spain with the Olympics right now. Like, they have gone from one guy, like, Ish was the only point guard on the roster that could really run the offense last year. No offense to TJ McConnell, who I think is a fine third string point guard. But, like, TJ started a number of games last year, which should never happen. Like, you should never have an undrafted rookie point guard as your starter point guard and expect anything good to happen. But now they have... I mean, yeah, Simmons, Sarge.
Is TJ still on the roster?
For now. I mean, I think they'll keep him. I really do think they'll keep him as their third string point guard. Jared Bayless. Kendall Marshall's also on the roster. I think he's probably going to get cut.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they've just so dramatically increased the number of guys that can handle the ball and run an offense that, like, I think the Sixers were third last year in terms of passes per game. Like, it would not surprise me at all if they led the league in that this year, just because they have so many guys who can, like, who can grab a board and just run it out on transition. Like, it's going to make them very hard to defend because you don't know who's going to be running the offense on any given play.
Yeah, man. I just wrote a really great article about KJ McDaniels.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fantastic. I strongly suggest that you go ahead and open that up in a tab. He would be a really great fit on this team, actually. I mean, of course, the shooting is a concern, but I mean, in terms of, like, I want to, like, figure out a way that I really like this whole positionless thing, right? And it seems to me like you might even be able to do Ben Simmons, Dario Saric 5-4 if you could figure out some way of getting rim protection from your three.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which is, like, hard to ask, right? But, like, the only reason I'm thinking about this specifically is because I just wrote this article. And so we were talking about what it means to have LeBron James in the finals being the best rim protector in the league, right? Because finals LeBron James, no one wanted to go anywhere near the rim, right?
Right.
I don't think that's going to be at least Dario. Ben Simmons might have more of a monster inside of him than I think. He's got the IQ for it. I'm not sure Ben Simmons is as intimidating. I don't know.
No, maybe. I don't think either one of those guys. I mean, that Saric, definitely not. Simmons, he actually showed surprising lateral quickness during summer league. Like, defense was supposed to be a knock on him coming into the draft. I think, a big part of the Ben Simmons thing, you know, like, I remember we talked right after the lottery with Mort, and Mort was very much pro Brandon Ingram with the number one pick, and I was pretty pro Simmons. I think the problem is, like, Simmons is clearly the best prospect of this draft class. He just didn't give a shit at LSU. Like, once he realized that team was bad, he kind of just mailed it in for half a year.
I think that the two-man draft is a bit of a media narrative that's inorganic because people want to be able to argue about something like that. I think that it's a very clear one superstar draft. Ingram's cool. He looks like he's going to be a good player, and he even might be a great player, but, like, I mean, he might be bad. There's no guarantee he'll be great. Mm-hmm. And Ben Simmons, like, is going to be... I mean, if he never develops a jump shot, he'll still be an all-star.
Right,
it's like they're in different leagues.
Yeah. It forces defenses into such a conundrum because there aren't 6'10" guys who can pass like that. Like, you're not, you're opposing fours. Like, it's hard enough just to guard stretch fours, but you can't, like, it's just so difficult to guard a guy who you're not used to having to worry about, like, creating these insane passes. And it's not like he's just dumping these little, like, bounce passes off into the post. He has, like, insane vision, as he showed during Summer League.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that don't translate from Summer League.
Right, right, right.
And passes are one of them. But that being said, the execution of those passes were of Ben Simmons' turnovers in Summer League. Two of them were turnovers that came from passes, and then both of them were passes that his teammate should have caught.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, I think he averaged 5.5 assists during Summer League, but, like, that could have easily been 7 or 8 if he was playing with real teammates.
So the way I figure, right, is the Summer League effect balances out because, on one hand, yes, the defense isn't going to give up passes to Simmons that were there in Summer League. Like, NBA defenses won't give those up. But an NBA offense, like, playing next to a guy, even like Gerald Henderson, who's, like, no big shakes, but, like, a real NBA player, playing next to him, he's going to catch and execute off of passes that some of his Summer League teammates weren't.
For sure. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
It'll balance out at least to some effect. I'm not sure where that ratio is going to lie, but it's going to start to work in the 76ers' favor as they do become more and more of a quote-unquote NBA team, because right now they're like an NBA team.
Right. Yeah, I mean, well, first, just jumping back to your KJ point, I mean, A, like, I think that bridge is probably burned with KJ himself.
Why given the that?
Whole given the whole Hinkie tried to force him into taking a below market contract, and then he was like, no, F you, I'm just gonna take a 1-year deal.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, like, I don't know what the Rockets haven't used him at all in the past year and a half. So, like, maybe if they again decide to not use him this year, Colangelo calls him up halfway through and is like, hey, I'm not Sam Hinkie. You can come back here and we'll we'll actually negotiate with you and not try to lowball you.
Or maybe someone like Yabusele.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like a big dude, you know, a rim protector 3. I don't know, even maybe Jay Crowder might work in that type of role. I want to figure out a way that the 76ers can run Dario and Simmons as their two bigs and not just be a below league average NBA defense.
Yeah.
And this wouldn't be a starting lineup.
Right. Just like a look to throw out.
Yeah. And I mean, if you pulled it off, it would be maybe their lineup of pain.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah, you can't say
lineup that of insert way of hurting someone.
Right,
you know?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, Jeremy Grant is probably the best guy currently on the roster suited for that position.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Who's the guy who's on the Nuggets now?
Jakar Sampson.
I really liked
him. Yeah, that was...
He's shit, though.
It was just a bump. Yeah, he's not a good NBA player. Like, he was gonna get that cut sucks. This year anyway, so I'm not, like, super bummed about it, but, like, at the same time, I forget the exact specifics, but I know we ended up having to waive him for no reason. Like, we waived him for part... Oh, it was part of the Mata Yunus deal, I think. Like, we were somehow involved and we're gonna get a player back, so we needed to make space, and then that trade got canceled, but we still had to waive him anyway, so that was unfortunate. But yeah, he would have been cut either way. They just didn't have the roster space for him.
Yeah, but I mean, like, God knows they're looking at a lot of those guys. Like,
yeah,
they're just filling out their roster with athletic wings who have utility and might, you know, I don't know, maybe like a Timmy Turner type thing where he wakes up and has fairy godparents and he can wish for a jump shot, you know?
Like, I mean, you know, the Sixers got criticized for that approach a lot. And, like, I think the big argument against the whole process was like, oh, well, they should have brought in a few extra veterans. But, like, that's what Orlando did with Ben Gordon and Channing Frye. And where did that get them? They got nothing out of either player. And then traded them for absolutely nothing, I believe. Like, what did they get for Channing Frye from Cleveland?
Oh, God.
Like, a second-round pick? And then they, like, punted.
Yeah.
They They traded Mo Harkless for a pick they're never going to see. They traded Tobias Harris for cap space to spend it all on Jeff Green. Like, I would rather spend that money. It's not even a money thing. It's like a roster space thing. And, you know, they didn't hit that many guys, but, like, one out of 10 is still a great return. And that's what they got with Robert Covington. Like, he is a legitimate NBA rotation player. And he's one of the best value contracts in the NBA right now because he's being paid like $1 million each for the next 2 years.
They're talking about a team like the Timberwolves, right, who had Kevin Garnett running around.
Yeah.
Oh, the Orlando Magic wouldn't be the example of that. And the thing is, I get what you're saying, definitely, for sure. But aren't you a little bit happy about, I mean, we talked about the Colangelos, like they didn't shit the bed yet.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. And I've been considering whether maybe the 76ers ownership group is like the Dr. Evil and they're like the puppet masters of all of this, right? But it's the Olympics, and so there's a lot of talk about the Colangelos because Team USA.
Right.
And there is that whole folk story about Colangelo gets called in, he has a meeting of just everyone who's swag in the NBA, and he just sits there and like listens to everyone talk, and he's like, okay, it sounds like this is what we should do. It makes you wonder whether that was sort of like, you know, Colangelo didn't really have a feeling one way or the other, like, this is what we should do. But he sat in a room and ended up thinking a lot of the things that Hinkie did after his sensory deprivation time pod, where he just was meditated on what the process was going to be.
Right.
I think that, you know, Colangelo ended up coming to a lot of the same conclusions, but then decided that a guy like Sergio Rodriguez being around wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And either way, I think the issue I take is painting this offseason like if Hinkie was still there, they wouldn't have invested in any free agents. Like, he had repeatedly said, heading up to this year, that they were going to spend like 10 to 15 times as much this summer as they did the past 3 years. Like, the point of the process was to get one superstar and then start building around them. So Ben Simmons is that guy, and now Joel Embiid is healthy. If he stays healthy, he has similar potential. So now you've got two guys who can be what you were going after. So now you start to build a roster around them because you know the talents that you are building around. Like, it makes sense now to say, okay, I've got my core guys in place. Let me find complementary pieces who are veterans, who are free agents, you know, like, there's no way they were not going to round out the backcourt. They were not going to trot out Ish Smith and TJ McConnell as their starting point guards for another year. Like, they learned.
But Hinkie took, I don't know, man, that last year, that very last offseason, like, that was the one that was like,
yeah,
are you sure you want to go with Kendall Marshall?
Right. And I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I was pretty vocal last summer about saying, like, Corey Joseph is there. He's a good value that you're going to grade on a great contract. But if you do that, like, I know it's completely reductive to do this because you have, you know, the point of the process is look at the process and not the results.
Yeah.
But if you bring in a point guard, you probably don't get the number one pick.
Right. Right.
So, like, now,
it's true, Brian.
Looking back, was it worth it to suffer through one more season?
Yes.
For Ben Simmons, for like probably 9 years of team control of Ben Simmons? Yeah. I mean, I come to that same conclusion. And you know, I think if he signs a point guard, he still has a job, and that the Colangelos never get brought in because they're not going to go off to a 1-30 start.
Okay, Brian, this is something I've been thinking about a lot, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready to get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat on with me?
Oh, yeah. Okay, absolutely.
Great. Sweet. So, 76ers ownership, all right? Dig, if you will, this picture.
Uh-huh.
76ers ownership. Understand all of this, right? And understand that they need to be the worst team in the league this year. And understand that Hinkie's process was something that needed to happen.
Yep.
They understand before even hiring Sam Hinkie to be the GM a few years ago.
Yeah.
So what they do, okay, is they hire Hinkie and then think, okay, we're going to tell this guy, all right, you do your process and we're going to let you see it to the end and it'll be great. But in the back of their minds, they're like, no, it's too poisonous to go 1-30 4 years into a rebuild. We know we're going to have to fire this guy. That's just going to be a reality. And then we can have our cake and eat it too, because after 4 years of the process, we can wipe the slate clean, and all of a sudden we have, you know, NBA reverence, revered NBA Colangelos, they're going to come in and take the reins. And so we get the prestige of a real organization and the assets of a real process.
Right.
And now they're just in their volcano secret fortress, like, cackling.
Yeah, harvesting blood from young people like Peter Thiel.
Yeah. Cloning Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
This one still can't shoot. Throw in the incinerator.
Yeah, one of these guys will. Yeah, I mean, I love the conspiracy theory, and, you know, 3 months ago I would have been right on board. I mean, I think there is definitely part of it that is true. Like, the ownership group does deserve credit for being willing to let Hinkie at least have 3 years, because, like, most GMs don't have that type of time.
And, yeah.
You know, like, if they do, like, most GMs would have been fired after year two, especially when it ends up, when the lottery ends up not working in their favor. I mean, I really think it all comes back to the night of the 2015 draft, because, I mean, technically the lottery, but, like, the draft itself. Because if the Lakers take Jahlil Okafor number two, as was expected leading up to the entire, I mean, up until the day of, I think the morning of, Bleacher Report's Kevin Ding was the one who broke wind of, like, oh, wait, the Lakers are actually leaning toward D'Angelo Russell. But if the Lakers take Okafor at two, the Sixers have D'Angelo at three, they have a point guard, they don't have this absurd front court logjam. Like, again, I think you don't get off to a 1-30 start. You probably, maybe you still bring in the Colangelos anyway, but I think...
Well, hey, I mean, that, like, wasn't Kristaps still available, and...
Yeah, so there. That's the conspiracy theory.
Moutier, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, he was not going to be... I love Moutier, but he was not the number three pick in that draft. But the conspiracy theory is that Hinkie wanted Kristaps, but the ownership group overruled him.
Yeah, you're right, that is the conspiracy.
Yeah, I mean, there is... Like, Woj reported that Kristaps' agent wouldn't let Hinkie speak to him, so they were basically flying blind.
So?
Yeah. So, I mean, my theory, if, I mean, there have been whispers about this. No one has been able to confirm it, and I doubt anyone ever will. But my theory is the 2014 draft was his home run draft. Like, you take Embiid at three, even though he's injured, and you know you're not going to get him. You take Saric at 12, or you, like, trade for Saric at 12, even though you know you're not going to get him for 2 years. So you have two lottery picks and you get nothing out of them. Once Embiid gets re-injured, they're like, fuck it, we can't wait another year. We have another top three pick. Like, we need to get some sort of production out of him. We can't take this, like, high upside, high risk gamble in Kristaps. Jahlil is a safe double. Like, he's not a home run. He's just a safe insurance for Embiid. If he never comes back, let's just take him and see, you know, trade one of those guys eventually, see how the chips fall.
And there's something to be said for, let's wait and see if Jahlil was a bad pick, because if it comes to be that Jahlil is, I mean, if we wake up a couple nights from now and Jahlil turns into a pumpkin and then that pumpkin turns into Marcus Smart and a 2018 Brooklyn pick, like, that's great.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, do not get me started on Boston, because I just have pure fire to when it comes to them and refusing to trade with anyone. But I do think Jahlil is going to have a good NBA career. I just don't think it's going to be in Philly because of the logjam. But that's, like, that's not his fault.
I've been thinking a lot about Jahlil and the situation that he's currently in terms of, like, it's a similar type of thing when we were talking about the counterbalance with Ben Simmons and his passing in summer league.
Mm-hmm.
Jahlil Okafor was a really bad rim protector.
Yeah.
But how much of that was him playing next to Noel and not having any perimeter defenders? And even more so, how much of that was him, a rookie big man, notoriously not... I mean, everyone says, right? You don't understand what it's like to be a professional athlete until you're a professional athlete in terms of conditioning and stuff.
Yeah.
So, rookie big man, right out of college, he has to back to the basket, create all of their offense, and then go on the other side and protect for a terrible defense. Like,
right.
That is a good equation to have the worst rim protector in the league. And the question becomes like, and it's also, by the way, a good equation for having really terrible fourth quarter stats, which he had, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's exhausted.
Right.
So all these pieces fit together, but I just don't know if you move him to Boston, if all of a sudden all of those things stop being a factor, or more realistically, they become less of a factor, but then it's like, what is that variable? How much less?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I definitely think, I think you're totally right in that a lot of his bad stats were not necessarily his fault. Like, if Ish Smith and Nick Stauskas are your starting backcourt, it's a at
the
layup line.
Still in the league? Has he been waived yet?
He's on the Sixers still. What are you, in theory?
Okay. All right. This podcast is over, man. I can't do this anymore. All right. Never mind. 76ers suck. This. Nope. Not.
Yeah. I know. At least they have Henderson, so he's not the starter anymore, but he is still in the league. But yeah, I mean, like, if that is your starting backcourt, it doesn't, I don't care if you have Hakeem Olajuwon, like, he's gonna have some struggles containing the 15 layups they give up every quarter. So in that sense, I do think he will become a better defender over time. I mean, right now, to me, he's what Enes Kanter is in OKC. Like, he is the ideal big that you bring off the bench and just have, it seems like the NBA is kind of trending in this way, like Indiana signing Al Jefferson for this reason. Like, you have these traditional back to the basket guys that you have on your second unit.
Yeah.
And then they just like dominate these overmatched, like just terrible, like Maurice Spates is just going to get worked on the second unit by Jahlil or by Al Jefferson or by Enes Kanter. And like, those guys are defensively limited, but it doesn't matter as much because they're going against backup guards who can't necessarily blow by them as easily or blow by the guys who are guarding them.
I mean, surely you still hope that Jahlil and Enes Kanter, for that matter, become tolerable on defense. Because, if you want to think about it in terms of Dungeons and Dragons sort of basketball, which I think both of us are on the same page there, it's like when a guy like Nerlens Noel, when he's playing defense, is like two steps ahead and Jahlil is two steps behind,
mm-hmm.
It'll be a big deal even if he's only one step behind,
For sure.
Or like if he's just like in real time,
Yeah. If he becomes tolerable on that end of the court, he'll be an all-star one day.
Yeah.
Like he really is going to be a 2010 guy in his very near future. It's just like, you're already trying to figure out, like, again, we talked about it earlier, like Simmons and Saric, neither one of them project to be an elite defender either. So can you trot out a Simmons Okafor starting front court? Hell no. Because you're just like, you need better rim protection than that. So you need either.
Hey, I don't know. I like it.
Do you?
Yeah. If only because Ben Simmons will be operating from the perimeter if he's a ball handler, right?
Yeah.
Jahlil Okafor will have all of that space open to operate from sort of Tim Duncan-y top of the key. Your secondary playmaker, and you started to reference this idea earlier in that defenses don't know what to do with the 6'10" ball handler.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good to throw things at defenses that they're like, what the f*** is this?
right.
I mean, like, Steph Curry, only 1 out of 30 games a season do you need to think about, how am I going to deal with someone who can shoot off the dribble from 40 feet away?
Yeah.
So, if your primary playmaker is Ben Simmons, and your secondary playmaker is Jahlil Okafor in his Kentucky, Tim Duncan, top of the key type playmaking role when he was getting, like, 3, 4, 5, 6 assists rather than, like, 0.1, 0.2,
right.
Yeah, you're going to have, like, really, really, really bad defense. But if you just, like, trot that lineup out for, like, 5 minutes a game and just blow the waters off of the starting lineup, I mean, I think that's what you would maybe want to do, is, like, exhaust the starting lineup defensively by playing those guys at the start of the first and third quarters, then just have a more wholesome Martha Stewart type go-to lineup after that. I don't know. It's a thought.
Yeah.
Hopefully Joel Embiid will like have Blastoise cannons infused on his back, which I hear is a possible development. I hear he's been, like,
right,
working on his outside jump shot and then the ability to fire gallons of water out of cannons on his shoulders. That's the rumors I've heard.
That's why he was going to Qatar last year, was to get those cannons installed on his back. It was not for his... not to rehab his foot. It was just to evolve into a Blastoise.
I don't know why I went with Blastoise. I was on a roll there. But anyways, go ahead.
No, I think the thing that worries me about a Simmons-Okafor lineup is Simmons, until he shows any semblance of a jump shot, I feel like opponents are just going to sag off of him and just clog the paint. So I don't know that Okafor has as much space as he would need to really thrive. Like, I think he still deals with the same double teams that he was getting last year, because then opponents are just like, all right, Ben Simmons, you're behind the three-point line. Godspeed, buddy. Shoot, fire away.
Okay, so my reaction to that, though, is that this isn't even a knock on Brett Brown because they didn't have any other options on offense. I think that the tunnel vision that Jahlil had and that we are now used to after his first year, I think that tunnel vision was imposed on him. And maybe in college, right, he showed the type of passing ability to be able to exploit a little bit of sagging. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just... in the same way that I desperately want to see, I think that it's probably not going to be their best way to play. I still think the 76ers need to do it, is in the full court, start to play Dario and Ben together, because in the long run, that'll be like the best transition offensive duo in the league.
Yeah.
It's going to be super swag.
Right.
In the same way that I think that that needs to happen, it might be the case, and I'm not as confident about this, that you need to start to work on the potential of a Ben Simmons, Jahlil Okafor half-court pairing. Because, like, if they could develop good chemistry, get ping-pong back-and-forth type of stuff going on, I think that it'll be really good.
Yeah.
This is all just, like, thinking, though. It's probably unrealistic, and...
No, I think you're right.
It's a thought.
I think you're spot on. I definitely think if they go into the season with all five guys still on the roster, Simmons, Saric, Embiid, Noel, and Okafor, like, Brett Brown's going to experiment with those guys. He's not going to, like, go in, this is my starting lineup, this is my bench unit, I'm not switching anything. Like, he showed a lot of experimentation last year. Like, he switched Noel and Okafor at the 4 and 5.
Did yesterday against the... it's the American... Wait, no, he's not the coach of the Australians anymore. Never mind, I'm just kidding.
No. Oh, I wish. Yeah. No. But I think he will definitely experiment, and, like, whatever the starting lineup is night one might not be in the 10th game of the season, and even still, like, he'll definitely jumble rotation. So I think we will definitely see Simmons and Okafor work together at some point early in the season. I have a feeling the opening night starting lineup is Simmons and Noel. They're going to ease Embiid in very, very gradually, as they should, since he hasn't played competitive basketball in 2.5 years. And I think, you know, Noel, he's more athletic than Okafor. So, like, if Simmons just wants to throw up lobs to him, like, I don't know how you defend that. And then, you know, you can bring Okafor and Saric off the bench. And Saric, you know, he's not as good of a passer as Ben Simmons, because very few big men are. But he's still, like, that's a strength of his. So he's also, like, a better long-range shooter. I mean, he's not great.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Sharks of The Ringer had a thing yesterday about how basically his jump shot is going to, like, make or break how good the Simmons-Saric pairing can be.
Probably. But I think I could see that, yeah.
Of Simmons and Saric, Saric is the better shooter. Therefore, if you put him next to Okafor primarily at first, you don't have to worry about as much of the defense sagging off and double-teaming Okafor. So it just seems like Simmons, Noel, Saric, Okafor are the more natural complements to start. And then at that point, you just see how it plays out. Like, you see which guys work best together. And I think, you know, this is... you would think, like, a 10-win season would be the most challenging of someone's career just because it's so discouraging. But, like, this is going to be the hardest season of Brett Brown's career because he needs to figure out on the fly which of these guys works best together. And I, you know, at this point in the offseason, it doesn't seem like they're going to trade anyone.
And that's probably the right move, right? Because, like,
yeah.
You don't want to accidentally step on the landmine of, like, oh, we traded the wrong one.
Right. And if, I mean, God forbid if Embiid gets hurt again, like, at that point, you're just like, you can't count on him. So, you know, you need to at least make sure he can play, like, a month or two of competitive basketball before cutting bait. I mean, they do have, like, I really like Rashawn Holmes. He's, you know, he's going to be buried on the bench most likely and might even have to go down to the D League. But
if you can keep him around for, like, two or three more years, yeah. Then, like, he fits really well as a big off the bench. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that 3 years from now, they're not going to have all five of those young, ultra-talented bigs.
Right.
So, I mean, he could be a good eventual bench piece. It's just, I really like him too, but I don't see how he's still there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he's totally buried. But he is signed through 2018, 2019 on one of the,
Hinkie,
like,
specials.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they have the, like, I would be very mad if they cut him because he is such a good value and he has shown.
Yeah, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I think once you figure out which one of those guys you trade, he is your fifth big man. Like, he's totally fine in that role and he can really probably play either spot, especially.
Who's the guy who, like, signed with the Hornets just did? Christian Wood, is that him?
Oh, yeah, that one hurt.
Feels bad.
That's the problem with this logjam is that there's just no space. Like, I think he's a good player too, and I think he's going to have a role in Charlotte, but there is just, you know, he's totally buried. There is no way he was going to crack the rotation. I mean, the Sixers still have Carl Landry on the roster as well. Like,
what?
The Sixers still have Carl Landry as well. So, yeah. Plus, like, Jeremy Grant, he played some four last year. Covington could play some small ball four. Like, they've got, so I'm saying, like, Brett Brown's got a hell of a challenge on his hands figuring out how to get all of these guys minutes. But I really do think, I mean, I have a feeling Rashawn's going to be in the D League a lot this year.
Yeah, I agree. Taking this in a similar but slightly different direction, would you trade Joel Embiid for two LeBrons, or would it take three?
Probably a LeBron, a Kevin Durant, and a Karl Anthony Towns. Seems like a fair request. No, at this point, I mean, Embiid's value is just so low, and his upside is so high that I just don't see the point in trading him at all. Like, you just have to wait it out. Right. You've gone so far, like, you can't. It's not like fantasy basketball or fantasy football where, like, you know, you draft Eddie Lacy in the first round last year, and he's just total garbage. And you're like, all right, 4 weeks in, like, I guess I'll just cut bait. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't work like that with an NBA player. Like, you're so invested in Embiid, you just have to see how it plays out. Like, of the three bigs, I would be most surprised if they traded him, just because I think
you're
going to get such a bad return. And, I mean, it sounds like they can't get...
I think the mayor of Philadelphia might step in, too, because it's like, if you trade this guy, we're going to have riots.
Oh, my God. There would be so many couches burning. It would not be good.
Hinkie would go into the witness protection program.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Then Colangelo... That's the thing. Like, I say all these... I'm scared to say all these nice things because I know that this decision is still looming. And, like, he has not shied away from saying, look, we're going to have to trade one of them.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret, you know? Like, everyone knows it. People say, like, oh, it's killing the Sixers' leverage.
Didn't,
like,
he say we need to trade one of them this offseason? Like, that's...
I was just looking at... Let me pull up his quote. I think he just... I don't know if he said this offseason. He's been very clear about saying that, like, he's not going to trade one just to trade one, and if, like, the deal doesn't make sense, he's not going to do it. It's like, we need to trade one eventually, but, all right, here we go. He says, there's no question you can look at our roster and say we have some imbalance, we're top heavy. When you look at the calls coming in, quite frankly, everyone's trying to poach a big man from us. So it sounds like people are trying to get trying to say, like, look, you have no leverage. Nerlens is a restricted free agent next offseason. you got to trade one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these dudes are under team control. Like, Nerlens is, he's restricted, but you can just retain him. Like, you don't give up players like that.
Yeah. The real equation there is pretty simple, right? It's, you know, in this new cap environment particularly, what is more valuable? A formless, weightless, conceptual $20 million of cap space, or a very, very, very good...
Yeah, right, like...
center. It's like easy, like you match a max offer.
Oh my god, in a heartbeat.
Duh.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah, I'm not super excited about it, because if Embiid is healthy, Nerlens is still going to be a backup center for the Sixers. So, like, spending a max contract on a guy who's going to be a backup is not the best allocation of resources, but you just, like, you can't give him away.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just lose him for nothing. So if the choice is overpay him or lose him for nothing, you overpay him. I mean, if Timothy Mozgov got $16 million a year, Nerlens, like, what is he going to get? Of course he's going to get a max deal. Like, there's zero question.
Dude, if the Lakers set the market, man.
I mean, that was a horrendous deal. Or, like, a 31-year-old Joakim Noah coming off of how many knee injuries? He gets $72 million?
The difference between the Mozgov signing and every other bad signing this offseason is that, like, there's no world in which it's a good deal.
Yeah, right.
If we're, like, operating in multiverse theory, which, like, I am. I don't know about you, man, but if you're not getting on my level. but if we're operating in multiverse theory, then, like, there's a universe where Joakim Noah is, like, fourth in MVP voting Defensive Player of the Year Joakim Noah again.
Yeah.
And is thus worth that much money.
That's true.
But, like, even if Mozgov is, like, as good as he was at his peak, he's still not worth that.
No, right, yeah.
Like...
And the fact that they handed that contract out within like 30 minutes of free agency opening. It was just like so spectacularly bad, especially looking at like Festus Ezeli gets a 2-year $15 million deal. You really wouldn't want Festus Ezeli on a deal half as long and a fourth as much as Timofey Mozgov.
I remember my timeline like it was yesterday. So many retweets of Woj, with the added caption, what?
I know. I think everyone was like, I mean, I was doing this too. I was warning, like, all right, we're going to see some really bad deals this summer. Like, the cap is going to force these ridiculous contracts. And then I saw Mozgov and I was like, nope. Was not prepared for this. I thought I was, but oh my god, $16 million for Mozgov. But I mean, that just goes back to the point that Nerlens is going to get. I mean, he's going to get. I would be shocked if he gets anything less than a max. And I think if the Sixers can somehow, if they can do it, from what I've read, the Blazers with CJ McCollum, you know, they gave him this 4-year max extension. Quote unquote max extension.
Yeah.
But they actually set the dollar amount in stone now. So even if the max goes up under the new CBA, he's not going to get more money. That, like, if he was eligible for like an extra $5 million a year under the new CBA, he's still gonna get 4 years, 106. So if the Sixers can do that,
yeah.
If they're like, Nerlens, we'll give you a max, but like we're not comfortable, you know, if they raise how much each max can be, like, we don't want to expose ourselves to that kind of risk.
Yeah.
You know, if they can get them for anything 106 million or below, I think you have to do it. And then again, figure it out later, but like, don't lose these guys for nothing.
Yeah. So your expectation though, or maybe not your expectation, but your hope is that you trade Nerlens Noel and Jahlil accepts a bench role as the primary scorer, like the sixth man scorer, like an Enes Kanter type thing. He accepts that type of role, which I think is like a questionable expectation, but let's say that it happens.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And that Embiid, of course, works out, and that his hydro pump is super effective. And so the basic framework of this team is, you know, with Jahlil off the bench, Joel Embiid, so Simmons, Joel Embiid, front court, and then you said Saric. I mean, I think Saric can eventually probably move to start, you know?
Yeah.
I think that Simmons will be mobile enough that it'll be okay, you know?
Yeah, to move him to three if you need to.
Yeah. Positionless NBA, yeah. Like yada yada. What's going to be important is that Saric is a good enough shooter that that can work.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, and actually, that Joel Embiid is a good enough shooter that can work too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the real wild card because he's shown off. I mean, like, they're meaningless workout videos. You know, like every NBA player hits 70% of his threes in it in workouts, but like.
Except Dwight Howard, apparently.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's true. But like Embiid has shown off that he has a 3-point shot. Like he is the best shooter of all three of the Sixers' bigs. So like if he is actually, I mean, I doubt the Sixers put him in that position right away. I bet they're like, all right, you can work from the mid-range, but like don't take 4 threes a game, Joel.
Yeah.
But if he does have that type of range, yeah, like Simmons, Saric, Embiid front court could at some point eventually work out. I do think that's going to be at least a year or two down the line though.
Yeah. But the last thing before we head out is, you know, somewhere after you're finishing shuffling this deck of cards, there's probably a 3-4-5 on the 76ers roster. A foundational 3-4-5, right?
Yeah.
And maybe even a bench scoring big if Jaleel works out, but you know, maybe not.
Right.
But you know, and I think I know the answer to this question. There's no one or two, though, right?
Yeah, right.
Basically, all this fun stuff about development aside, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how Jonathan Charks?
Yeah, Jarks? I think Charks.
Tejarks? I'm not sure exactly how Jonathan Tejarks framed his, like, Dario Saric needs to develop shooting if the 76ers are going to be successful.
Uh-huh.
But if the question is, like, can they be a really, really quality 50-60 win NBA team? The real thing the 76ers need to do is figure out a one or a two. Like,
yeah.
That's what, like, you know, Colangelo mission objective number one and number two is to find a number one and a number two to pair with a really promising slew of people who are 6'9" and above.
Right.
Including
Big
Shot Bob.
Yeah. Oh, I hope he stays around. I mean, he could always just roll out a full lineup of 6'10 guys, like Simmons, Saric, Embiid, Okafor, and Nerlens.
That is what I like to call zagging when everyone else is zigging.
Yeah. Screw your small ball, Warriors. Good luck with Nerlens Noel at the three.
Man, that joke never gets old to me because it comes along with the vision of it actually happening.
I know. It's so amazing. Yeah, I want to buy the new NBA 2K just so I can make that happen. Like, just totally play the Sixers and make that my starting lineup. Yeah, I mean, the backcourt is obviously the big question moving forward. I mean, I think it's safe to say that Sergio, Bayless, and Henderson are not long-term answers.
What are the 76ers' first-round picks next year? Because aren't there a lot of good backcourt players in next draft?
Yeah, there sure are. Yeah, there are a bunch of really good point guards. Like, I think 5 of the top 10. Let me pull up Draft Express real quick. I want to say it's like 5 of the top 10 prospects are point guards. And so the Sixers have their own first-round pick. And they also have a top 3 protected pick from the Lakers, who, with Ingram, Luol Deng, and Mozgov, and without Byron Scott,
they're probably still
going to be pretty bad. But like, I don't know that they're going to be top 3 bad. Like, I have a feeling they'll be in the, I mean, they could be as high as 4, but probably in the like 6 to 8 range. So realistically, the Sixers are almost guaranteed to have 2 top 10 picks next year. One of which is likely to be in the top 5.
Yeah.
So, yeah. DX has Markel Fultz, Dennis Smith. I'm not even going to say this guy's last name. But I'll need to learn it in the next year. But Frank Ntilikina.
Pretty good.
I don't know. And then De'Aaron Fox is number 11. So, 4. And then Lonzo Ball, 14. So, 4 of the top 14 are point guards.
Alonzo's born to ball, man.
Yeah, so I mean,
it's his last name.
That's true. That is a sign of destiny right there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think you get the point guard of the future in this draft, and then
also
shooting guard
of the future.
It doesn't look like. I mean, you know, take all of this with a huge grain of salt because it's a year away from the actual draft, but does not look like Yeah, the first pure shooting guard is at 24, Terrence Ferguson. So I don't know that you're reaching that high, but maybe, you know, maybe someone breaks out this year as a shooting guard.
I hear Ray Allen's looking to make an NBA return.
That's true. I mean, I would, let me see.
I think a 50-year-old Ray Allen could be the shooting guard of the future.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. If Gerald Henderson can't be, why not Ray Allen? I'm trying to think of, like, I haven't really looked at free agents next year, but I think you probably, that's where you go. I have a feeling you draft a point guard, and then let's see who the best shooting guards are in free agency next year. Be someone good. Oh, good. Okay. Oh, J.J. Redick. There you go.
I'm not
sure
he fits the time frame, but hey.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
As time crawls forward, as the never-ending march of progress happens, you know,
yeah.
As another year gets added, or another minute gets added without Joel Embiid actually playing an NBA game.
Hey, no.
I will have to say that we will talk about shooting guards the next time you come on. Brian,
yeah.
At B Toporek. Please spell Toporek for the folks at home.
Yes, that is T-O-P-O-R-E-K.
And follow him because he will be back on. I can't promise you that I'll remember that we were talking about potential shooting guards for the 76ers, but I can promise you that he'll be back in all of his NBA podcast glory. And yeah, so you write for Fansided, and you write for B-Ball Breakdown.
Yes.
And then you are the host slash co-host along with Sarah and Mort of the NBA podcast, found on all great podcasting services, and
yes.
You can follow them at...
at the NBA pod. And for those who are interested in fantasy basketball, I also do some stuff for Today's Fast Break there. I've been rolling out these team-by-team previews in recent days. I actually just did your Mavericks yesterday.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, team previews is something that our listeners know a lot about because I've been doing it, it feels like, forever now.
Yeah.
This is number 17.
Nice.
In, wait, 18, I think. It's number, I don't know, man. Time is an illusion. All right, hey, well, Brian, thanks a lot for coming on. It's always great talking basketball with you. I'll have to think of non-76ers-related excuses to have you on so that, you know, I mean, I can cover all 30 NBA teams equitably. But so long, good night. Thanks for listening. And, Brian, just one more time so that you just really gets hammered in how grateful I am that you came on today. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's always good.
All right, sweet. That's it.
Trust the process.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.